Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Bomer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Ilana Levine. If you know me, you know how obsessed I am with live performance. To me, nothing replaces being in a theater and the lights going down and the orchestra starts to play and that first moment of magic. And I know the way I feel about theater, some people feel about sports or opera or dance or comedy or food. And what if there was a place that you could go and find out which live events are going on near you that night? And then for a discount price, you can get off your couch, put down that clicker, and experience the magic that is live performance. Well, there is a place, goldstar.com. You just go to that website, you type in your city, and every amazing live event will be listed at discount prices. Theater, dance, comedy, film, food, concerts, sports. No more staying home. You are going to go out and build memories and experiences that expand your mind and heart through live performance with GoldStar.com. GoldStar is in 26 cities around the country with over 8 million members already signed up to find out what event is going on near you. So go to GoldStar.com. Get out of your house and build memories that are magic for you and your family. Expand your mind, expand your hearts. Go see live performance by using GoldStar.com. Tell them Alana sent you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I heard you need an inspiration. He's a lot of and friends with some revelations. Little known back to the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK. A-OK.
Hey everyone, new episodes of Little Known Facts drop every Monday and you can find them on your favorite podcast provider. Also, if you go to the website, littleknownfactspodcast.com, you'll find behind-the-scenes photos, videos, and interviews, and lots more on the gallery page. And if you are loving these intimate, candid conversations with all the artists who come on the show, please head over to the contributions page. I depend on these donations to continue to bring you these interviews every week. So if you love the show, please donate. Little known fact about my guest today. Her first professional job was a backup singer for Bette Midler. Welcome, Hamilton star Mandy Gonzalez, to the podcast.
A-OK. A-OK.
Hey, everybody. My guest today is the Drama Desk and Obie Award-winning actress, Mandy Gonzalez. Mandy currently stars as Angelica Schuyler in Hamilton on Broadway. She also starred in another Lin-Manuel Miranda Tony Award-winning Broadway musical called In the Heights as Nina Rosario. She played Elphaba in the Broadway production of Wicked. Other Broadway shows include Aida, Lennon, and Dance of the Vampires. Mandy recurs on several hit television shows, including Madam Secretary and Quantico. She's performed with prestigious symphonies all over the world. She's an author. She has a gorgeous solo album called Fearless, and I am over the moon to welcome Aww. Mandy Gonzalez to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
I wish you guys were here because she's wearing a Fearless Squad t-shirt.
As always.
Is it weird if I make you take it off and give it to me?
No,
is that weird at all?
No. I will send you one. They're actually very, very comfortable.
Really
now that it's
nice.
Spring, I feel yeah. like, why not? It's short not? Sleeve.
Totally. No better method.
Sort
in
of
the world.
Spring. Yeah.
Today is spring. Tomorrow there will be glaciers
oh,
forming
gosh,
on Broadway.
I hope not. I really hope not. on.
I know. That's another podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
This is about joy and love and musical theater and inspiring people to be fearless in all sorts of ways. Let's just start with that. So your solo album, Fearless, is extraordinary.
Thank you.
Know you've been performing work from that album as recently as like 2 nights ago.
Yes. Yeah.
But I want to sort of talk about the story behind the title track because I am obsessed with your parents and their story. And then we'll get into how Fearless became a motto, an anthem, a bumper sticker that is putting all good things out into the universe.
Yeah.
So, and don't worry, you guys, we're going to talk about Angelica Schuyler. I promise. I promise. Hang in there.
Right.
Don't mean to bury the lead. So your parents met in an unbelievably beautiful, unique way. I don't know that there are many stories that match this one. Can you just share? Because without them, you would not be sitting in this booth today or doing any of the things, the aforementioned.
It's very true. Absolutely. I'm here because I'm a product of love. I know a lot of people say that Stony End by Lauren Nero was definitely a song when I did that show at the Vineyard Theater that hit home, because I feel like Fearless started for me because of my parents, because of their fearlessness. My dad was drafted when he was 19 to Vietnam, to the Vietnam War, and he was... My father's Mexican American, and so my father grew up as a migrant worker, back and forth to Mexico, and just kind of following the crop around the United States. So he went, you know, I remember him telling stories that he went to North Dakota for the first time, and that was the first time he and his whole family saw snow.
Oh, wow.
And you know, they saw Mount Rushmore, and they call it the Four Heads in Spanish because they didn't know what it was.
Cuatro Cabezas.
Exactly. So, you know, he grew
up. That's
what
it should be called.
Exactly. So he grew up in a very hardworking family. You know, my grandfather worked very hard, but then he became a foreman in this small town called Reedley in California on one of the farms. And that's where my dad kind of they all plotted themselves, like when my dad was seven. So
kind of, if he had to say where he grew up,
that would be the town that he grew up in. And Reedley, that's really where when he started going to school. So up until that point, my father didn't speak any English. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the first time he had to learn English. And my dad also worked as well as went to school. So before school, he would work. After school, he would work in the fields alongside his family. And so when he went to the war, when he went to boot camp, he was by himself, and all these people had people writing to him. And, you know, my abuelito and my abuelita, they didn't speak English. They didn't write letters to my father. Nobody did. And so he felt very alone. And he lucked out because he bunked with this guy. My mother's sister was with this guy who then was also drafted to Vietnam and was in the same bunk as my dad. And so my mom was somebody who wanted to join the Peace Corps. And my mom is from Southern California, from the Valley. She's Jewish American. Totally different life. You know, her dad worked in real estate. It was just, they were comfortable, like totally different. But she had, you know, a big heart, a big empathetic heart. And so she wanted to join the Peace Corps. And her parents were like, no, absolutely not.
You're not going away.
No. So at 17, she started to write letters to different soldiers. And my aunt also asked her to write to my father. And so my mom wrote to my dad, and my dad wrote back. And, you know, happily so. And I think he said something like, I have really smooth lips. And, you know, different soldiers wrote her, but she's like, this guy is really interesting.
This guy has smooth lips.
I know. So she wrote back, and they corresponded throughout the year of my father's service. And I didn't find out about it until I was about 8 years old. And I found the letters in the closet, in our hall closet at like the very top, were these boxes of letters. And I asked my parents about it. My mom was like mortified, like, never read the letters, they're private. But you know, then it, you know, when you're eight and already like super nosy, like of course you're gonna read these letters.
We're getting a little like picture into who you were.
Of course.
You were like Snoopy.
Totally.
And
totally yep. Snoopy. Okay. You know, I'm the youngest of three. Oh. So it's like, come on.
One must look
like,
for
wait
the closet.
For me. You know, George Lopez tells that story of like, wait for me. Like, that was me. They'd be like, Mandy, we're leaving. And I'd be like, wait, I'm not
wait,
done.
Wait, but also I have to read the letters.
Exactly.
I'm coming.
So I like read all the letters, like through the years of my living at home. And I learned everything about my parents, like about their childhood, you know? And so it was that my dad, every letter was like...
Was he sent overseas?
Yeah. My dad was in Vietnam.
So he did boot camp.
Yes.
The letter writing starts there.
Yes.
Then he goes to Vietnam.
To Vietnam, and he continues to write to my mother through the whole thing. And you know, he writes about all of it, you know, about what he sees. And, you know, this was his first time on an airplane. And so my dad still has PTSD when he flies. I mean, I just have... fear of flying, but my dad really has it really bad.
Understandably.
And because that was his first time, is that when they landed, they went straight to combat, you know? And I can't even imagine what that's like at 19. And then to have this angel like on the other side that kept him, you know, hopeful and that there was something waiting for me, you know? And I think that they both needed an outlet to like somebody to communicate with that right. could understand them, you yeah. know? And so when my dad left the war, he went back home to Reedley and he got in his car and he drove down 6 hours to my mom's house and he showed up on her doorstep and was like, I'm here. And he had nothing. He had his car.
I hate to be like a stickler for detail, but yeah. like, was she home?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She was home. And...
She was home. Her parents were home. And I think everybody was just like, I mean, her mom knew that she was writing these letters.
Right.
But I don't think anybody thought anything was going to happen because of it. You know, I think they were just like, oh, they're pen pals. And that's really sweet. And then
good
this,
for you, sweetie.
Yeah. And then
war
this,
effort.
Yeah. And then this man shows up at the door that's, you know, Mexican and
been through stuff
and been through life. And so I think her parents, my mom was just, you know, completely in love with him, like from the beginning. And my dad immediately got a job. Like,
how
where
old was your mom at the time?
I think my mom must have been like 18.
Okay.
When he finally was there. And so my dad was like 20 and he got a job like working at different restaurants. He my dad has always worked and he showered like at the YMCA and he slept in his car. Like, it was just so intense. And people in my family, because if you meet my dad, like, you automatically fall in love with him. He's just the sweetest person ever, as well as my mom, but just in a different way. So my mom's, my grandmother's family, like, fell in love with my dad. And so then they started to let him sleep at their house and help him in a way where it was just, like, give him a place to stay and
sure.
kind of let him in. And then my parents fell in love and my mom... they wanted to get married and they got engaged. And then my grandfather was like, no, you can't get married. Absolutely not. Like, he's from a different world. And my father's family was kind of like, okay, like, this is who you want to marry. Okay. They didn't have any problems with it. But my mom's family did. And so they eloped. They went to Reno, Nevada. And we haven't been back to Reno since. I feel like we have to go back to like... make some peace.
Sure.
I want to go there. I want to go to Vietnam and just kind of
travel
be,
in their footsteps in that way.
I definitely do want to. And I don't know. I'd love to write about it and just kind of
Mandy,
discover
love
that.
To write about it. I mean, we're doing it.
Yes.
I can't
true.
Believe this story hasn't been optioned. Like,
I know.
This movie is happening.
Yes.
I mean, there are so many ways to option this material.
I know.
I'm a podcast host / actress, so I might not be the only one who can figure this out.
Right.
I imagine you've been approached.
I definitely have been. So now it's just a matter of, you know, kind of figuring out the story that I want to tell, you know,
yeah, and whose point of view and who's narrating.
But also
it
what's
and...
okay to tell.
Yeah.
You know, because it's so secret. It's so like, it's such a secret in my family and so many human
still,
qualities that are
still
happening.
Still,
yeah, there's still so many secrets in those letters. And I want to make sure, because I feel like those secrets are, some of them are very sacred, but some of them should be heard, because people need to know the struggle, and they need to know the struggle of, you know, an interracial relationship as well as the Mexican American experience.
Yeah, and this is the '70s.
It's the '70s, 71. Right. And so I think, you know, the fact that they made it and they've been married now 47 years. I mean, it's like insane.
Even...
And I had no idea because I grew up with both sets of grandparents.
You did. So when
everybody loved us. I never knew, like, yeah.
That chapter was over.
Yeah, it was over because really because of my dad. My mom kind of wanted to leave her parents and just be like, they don't accept us. Like,
right. They're, we're out.
Yeah, we're out. And he was like, that's your family. And my dad has honestly been the one that's been there the most, I think, for my grandparents. Mm-hmm. The one that, you know, if a sink broke, if something happened, my dad was there. And now my grandma's 97. My dad goes and picks her up and takes her to lunch. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing. And so I think everybody can learn from that. And so it's just a matter of kind of just sitting down and doing it.
I can't even quite, first of all, what an incredible thing.
Aww.
Right? Like on every level.
Yeah.
And this idea of like trusting your instincts in mm-hmm. that way.
Yeah.
Also, this is such an against all odds story. Mm-hmm. It's hard to be married no matter what.
It's so true.
Do you know what I mean, Mandy?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
You know, you're married.
Yeah. I've been married for 15 years, thank God. And I just think, like, you know, they did it when they were so young and they grew up together.
And
so much adversity, you know, and they had kids. And, you know, we went to Hebrew school. Like, I had a bat mitzvah with the last name Gonzalez. And now that's more, you know, accepted and known. But when I was growing up, it was like I always had to explain myself.
Right.
Like, oh, you don't look Jewish. You don't look Mexican. And I'm just like, well, what does that mean?
Right.
You know, so I had to kind of be okay with myself from the beginning, you know?
Well, so
I had to figure it out.
Did your dad convert to Judaism?
No, but he likes the food.
It's delicious. Come on.
Yes.
I would take an empanada on one plate and a matzo ball on the
other. Oh, my God.
Happily daily, if I could.
Oh, it's so true. It's so true. I think that my dad, after the war, my father was not religious. He decided that that's not where mm-hmm. he wanted to follow, but my mom was, and so she said, we're Jewish. And so my dad said, okay, everybody expects him. And it's funny because now he goes, I mean, it's all about the food and the tradition for him. And and so if he gets invited to somebody else's house, he always says to my mom, like, oh, I feel bad for saying this, but I don't know, the brisket wasn't that good. You know, he'll be like, it was kind of dry. You know, they didn't do it. They didn't do it like Bubby. You know, it's just like.
We're not saying whose house.
No.
And Cohen's.
No. And then my dad, like the humantaschen, like he'll be like, oh, it's not hard enough because my mom's Bubby like made it like a rock, you know. And so that's how my dad eats it.
Oh my God.
They make it without the apricot or the dates. Like my
He's
dad
like, no.
has comments.
Yeah.
You know,
he wants the old school.
Oh, yeah. My dad is like, I know what's up.
Incredible. Oh, he does.
And he wears that yarmulke with pride.
I can't. Like
at all the holidays at temple, you know, for our weddings, my dad's there. He's wearing the yarmulke.
It's become a part of him.
Yeah. And
because I've tried many different brands.
Yeah.
And so far, Mario Cantone was the most effusive of all my guests. And I was like, all right, that one, wherever I got that one, that's the one. But he's an effusive person
by nature. Yeah.
So you had a bat mitzvah.
Yes.
You probably sang at your bat mitzvah.
I did. I sang I Am Changing from Dreamgirls.
Oh,
because
my
who
God.
Doesn't need the singing machine and a vocal mic at your bat mitzvah?
Totally.
It was like, can I just relax? Like, no, Mandy, you're going to sing.
That's
you're
right.
going to sing I Am Changing because it tells the whole story of a bat mitzvah and what it means. So
think,
that was me.
I think whoever music directed your bat mitzvah was right. I really hope that there is video or.
Oh, I'm sure. My brother calls it the Mandy Vault because I'm the only one into musical theater, into any like performing arts in my family. And so my brother had hockey. And so maybe he has like one or two videos, but like the Mandy Vault just has like VHS of all my.
I love it.
All my videos.
I love
Hilarious.
It. I want in. The Smithsonian and I would like in.
Like the Mandy Vault.
The Mandy Vault. When did the Mandy Vault. Mm-hmm. That is filled with Mandy singing and performing.
Mm-hmm.
When did Mandy herself understand, like, oh, there's this other religion. There's Judaism, there's Catholicism, and then there's musical theater.
Right.
When did that enter, especially if your parents were in playing cast recordings around the house nonstop,
right,
like we are?
Yes.
Where did it come from?
Oh, it's
you?
So different with my daughter because already she, like, her favorite is Bye Bye Birdie right
sure.
now. Like every
She's
month.
She's not wrong.
No, every month she has a new favorite. So I'm just, you know, I tell all of her parents' friends ahead of time. I'm like, well, you know, your kids are going to learn about musical theater because
yeah.
that's just my
Hope
life.
You're okay with it.
Yeah, it's just my life. But I think it was because my parents worked so much to take care of us, you know. My
what
father,
did you end up doing professionally?
Well, my dad worked. We moved to Saugus, California, because my dad got a job at this place called Thatcher Glass.
Is it weird that I want you to say worked?
Work, work. No,
thank you.
It fits. It's
thank
very
you.
Musical. Thatcher
we'll do
Glass.
That as much as possible. Okay.
He made glass bottles. It's very Waiting for Guffman, like stools, like passing them along.
Oh my
no,
God, I love it.
So glass bottles, Thatcher Glass. But it wasn't like that.
There was no singing, sadly.
It was really hard. And most of the people in that area worked at Thatcher Glass. And so my dad did that. And my mom was stay at home for like the first, I would say, 5 years of my life. And then that's when my life changed and all of our lives changed because Thatcher Glass plant closed because everybody started using plastic.
Right.
And so my dad had to find odd jobs. Like he worked at a gas station. He, at one of the restaurants in our area, he was the janitor after hours.
Did you grow up in the Valley or another part of LA?
I grew up in another part of LA in Santa Clarita Valley.
Okay.
Now they have a TV show about it where people eat people, I think.
But we were not doing
there
that.
There was nothing like that.
No cannibalism in your elementary school.
There was nothing like that. So during that time that my dad was working kind of odds and ends, my mom got a job with the school district. And so my grandmother started to help out more
okay.
with us as kids. And
not abuelita, your mom.
No, my bubby.
Okay.
So she started to help out.
You had a bubby and an abuelita.
Yeah.
This is, come on. This movie is writing itself.
I know. It's so crazy. So, so my grandma was in love with musicals, in love with musical
okay.
theater. So she would play me the music.
She would
play it all the time. And so I fell in love with music. You know, my brother and sister were like, whatever. But
Burn
I was
it
like,
off.
Yeah, but this was like my dream, like Ethel Merman. And it was always big, like torch singers, like Ethel Merman, Edie Gourmet, Tammy Terrell, like all of these, Sammy Davis Jr., like
the
all
greats.
Of these incredible singers. And she would just play it all the time. And I would sing along, like to Anything Goes and to... you know, Judy Garland live at Carnegie Hall. It's still one of my favorite albums. So that's where I fell in love with musical theater.
Okay.
And my grandma noticed that I could sing. And so there was a dinner theater down the street called Showboat Dinner Theater that had like all you can eat pickles if you went to see the show. And like you could eat food. But I remember because my brother and I would eat the pickles and we would see a show. And so my grandma went to them and was like, I have a granddaughter. She's got to sing. And so they had classes for kids. Like, and so I took the classes in LA. And so this was in the Valley, like
okay.
Tarzana area. And so I did that on Saturdays. And then my grandma had every holiday, everything I would sing. She would put out the singing machine. My dad would work the sound and I would sing. And that's the thing I think is so great about my parents and my grandparents not knowing what was cool mm-hmm. and what to do, because they were just like, she's got talent, like do it, like
yeah.
anywhere. Anybody would ask me to sing, like they would say, yeah, the senior center, B'nai B'rith, you know. It was just like I did it all, you know. I did Venice Beach, like on the boardwalk I would sing. And so I learned how to do it and what I like to do and what got a reaction from people.
Uh-huh.
And so that's where I really fell in love with it. When I really got serious with it was when I took singing lessons from the singing teacher Seth Riggs in Hollywood. My grandma.
Is this like high school or?
This is high.
Okay.
So this is like high school. We're moving on.
Yeah.
And
not that I want to.
No,
I
no.
want to stay every day.
No,
every
no.
Year
so
until today.
No. So.
How long
so,
do you have?
I know, right? So then I went to this singing teacher who was incredible, and he taught at this summer camp called Broadway Theater Project in Florida.
Absolutely.
So I auditioned for Broadway Theater Project, and I got a full scholarship, which is the only way I could have gone. And it was run by Anne Rankin at the time, and I remember Gregory Hines was one of my teachers, and kids had to audition. Like, you had to send in a tape. I wish I could find that tape. And so I was with all the these really incredible like students, you know, and I had to you know, compete for parts and do things and also work together and to create this show that we put on at the end. We're putting on a show.
Yeah.
And I loved every minute of it. And you also got to do master classes with these like master, you know, performers. And Anne Rankine was such an inspiration to me there because she was just so knowledgeable and knew everything. And so I, when I got back from there, I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to go to Broadway. And so I went back to that camp the next year. And then I just became a regular like student. And so then I graduate high school and I'm doing drama in my high school. And
so you're doing all the shows.
Doing all the shows, and I play all the ethnic parts because that's what you do with the last name Gonzalez. So I was like Bloody Mary, Anita in West Side Story. Who else was I? Oh, they made a part called Consuela the Maid when I was in ninth grade because they were in Father of the Bride, the play, because they were like, well, you know, you're Latin, so let's make this a Latin part. And so it was like, so I learned about that early, early on. And so when I graduated, I wanted to stay close to home. So I went to CalArts, which was nearby. I auditioned for that school. And I went for
a year. Did you stay living at home?
I stayed living at home, more affordable. And I just wasn't ready to go. And then I booked a job through an open call as a backup singer for Bette Midler. And that took me away. And I left for 6 months to go on the road with her. And I learned so, so much. I was 19, almost 20 years old. And I was with people that were older than me. And I was away from home for the first time. It was completely like exciting and terrifying. And, you know, I was homesick a lot, but I saw all of these places that I had never seen in my life. You know, I went to Canada for the first time. I had to get a passport. You know, it was all this just super cool stuff. And then we came to New York for 2 weeks and we stayed at the Plaza. And I was like, I never want to leave, you know. And then when
my name is Eloise.
I know. I love it here.
Yeah.
And then I went back home and I saved all that money from tour and I moved to New York with my boyfriend, who's now my husband at the time, Doug Mullini.
A beautiful painter.
Yes. And we moved to Brooklyn. I never stayed at the Plaza again.
I bet maybe now
I learned how to do it.
Yeah.
I learned, you know, I learned about struggle and I told myself in 6 months I'm going to get a job. And, you know, I worked odd ends. I think that's another part of my family. I didn't have shame in struggle.
Right.
You know, I worked at the coffee shop. I worked bagging groceries for people. I worked as a hostess, coat check. I did whatever I could do so I could audition. You know, it's interesting when young people come to me now that are just starting and they're like, what do? Like, how do you audition? Like, I don't have time. And I'm like, you have to find time. You just have to do it.
And set up your life so that there's
set up your life. Or if somebody says, well, I don't have the money. You know, my parents, I don't come from money. I just say, well, I didn't either.
Yeah.
You know, you can do it. You know, I just came from a lot of love. And to me, that was, I was the richest person around.
But how did you, so it's so funny. I just had Bette's daughter. We just did a show together. Sophie.
Oh, God. I used
so
to
much.
See her.
Right?
Yeah, like she was young.
Yeah.
She was so young.
She's still young.
Yes, I know.
She
but
and
now
her,
she's like her own. She's an artist,
she's
right?
an artist. She's an actress. And she and a friend of hers who they went to Yale Drama School together are doing a podcast about dinner parties. And I'm terrified of throwing dinner parties. So someone was like, you need to meet Sophie von Hasselberg. And and so hearing about growing up with Bette and sort of like all the rinsing of saran wrap that happened and the composting and the tree, like they were a very down-to-earth family.
Right.
No TV, no snacks in Sophie's childhood. But tremendous inspiration in terms of work ethic.
Yeah. I think Bette is still, to this day, like one of the hardest working people that I've ever seen.
That's my sense.
And I was so impressed with her because, you know, she complained once in a while, like, oh, I can't see my kid. Or, you know, she was a mom, a working mom that, it's a struggle I go through.
Yep.
And she was married to an artist. And,
you know, it really is similar.
It was so, for me, inspiring because it was like, here she is. She can do it. I can do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think she realized that at the time because she was so, you know, busy, but she was just so giving in herself because she was just herself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so rare that you get that kind of experience when you're young to see, you know, one of your heroes just be human.
Yeah. The struggles. And
Yeah. And then to see her on stage and there's just nobody like her.
Yeah.
I mean, she would learn a new monologue for every city that day. She would read all the papers and then talk with Bruce Valanche, her co-writer. But it was really her, like she edited everything and she, you know, she worked with a director, but she was the one because she knew it's her name out there. And to see somebody like that from the beginning, it was like, I feel like the universe put her in my path for a reason to say, not you're going to be Bette Midler, but look at what you can do. You know, this is possible. Like this woman came from Hawaii.
Totally.
You know, Jewish. Like she just... she just kind of went to her own path. And I'm sure she had her idols, too. So
yeah, no, but that she was like invented it.
Yeah. I mean,
for herself.
Besides Barbara Streisand, that was Bette Midler was like my idol, you know?
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Do you see her ever? Do you ever cross paths?
No, I don't. I mean, I would love to. She was at Hello Dolly when I was at Hamilton. And I think our, you know, publicist or whatever tried to get together. But, you know, she's so... Bette Midler and busy, you know, but she came to my first original Broadway show, which was Dance of the Vampires,
right.
And it was a total bomb, and which was so hard to deal with in life, but
right, you I get the dream, and it's a bomb.
Yeah, and you're 23, and you're like, oh my God, it's all over, and you realize you're, you know, now looking back, it's just beginning, and if you can survive that, you can survive anything. And I remember after opening, Bette sent me a telegram. And it was my first and only telegram that anybody's ever sent me. And she said, you sound like an angel. And I'm so proud of you and love Bette Midler. And I keep it to this day. And it reminds me that, like, it didn't matter. You know, it didn't matter what anybody said or, you know, of course it did because it hurt. But I had to go through it. Everybody has to go through it because Bette Midler was still on my side.
Exactly. You should bring that
and
in.
And one day
when
I hope
I see
your
headshot and resume. Yeah. Like, how about this telegram?
Yeah. One day I would love to just sit down with her and just let her know how much she meant to me and means to me, you know?
Well, in the movie, Bette Midler as herself.
Yes.
I can see the billing.
Right.
It's already, don't worry. Got it.
It's already happening.
Or Sophie can play Bette Midler.
Oh, gosh. I know, right? So crazy.
Yeah.
So crazy.
Well, so at some point, mm-hmm. It begins.
Yes.
The devastating losses.
Yes. And triumphs.
And triumphs. when you came and were doing like 7,000 jobs and you're with your boyfriend, now husband,
mm-hmm.
How did you get your first agent?
I got my first job through an open call. For a show called Eli's Coming that
which
was going to
saw
Judy
Kuhn sang me down the aisle at my wedding.
Oh my God.
She's truly one of my best friends.
Oh my God.
And I saw that show at the Vineyard Theater.
That's so cool.
Four times.
It was such a great, I can't believe it wasn't recorded. It's so depressing.
I know. And obviously her one woman show now that she does, you know,
her Judy Kuhn
about Laura,
about Laura
Nero.
Nero
has allowed many more people to know about Laura Nero if they didn't already. And if you love Laura Nero. And, and she recorded the album.
She did. I went to her first rehearsal of that new show because she was like, I want you to see it, what you think. And I was just like, Judy, it's so great. And Judy Kuhn was such a, I guess, just a light for me. Not a light, but like handed me a compass in some ways. Because I remember when I did Eli's Coming and it was a big hit, you know, and I was making
Diane Paulus, by the way.
Yes.
An incredible.
And Anika Noni Rose, Ronell Bay. And we went from $200 a week to $400 a week. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so.
Looks like we made it.
I'm so famous.
Yeah.
Like, this is amazing. And
in this,
you know,
tiny ensemble.
And it happened. And I have to thank Cindy Tolan because she found me in that open call and gave me a chance.
She's an angel, right?
She's an angel.
She's one of those
and
people.
I will never forget that because she gave me, and her and Doug Abel gave me my first shot in New York City.
They're such nice people.
Such nice people. And so, you know, I remember the opening night of Eli's Coming. I think it was Judy's husband that was like, you know, it's not supposed to happen like this. Like, you're not supposed to just get like a hit show. And I was like, I know, it's just like, you know, just so crazy. And I remember.
That's so Schwab.
Oh,
that's
I know.
Exactly
so
like
Schwab.
How you would say.
And so then Disney came to see the show and was like, we want to hire you or bring you into audition as the standby in Aida for Idina Menzel. And I got the job and I was like, I don't know. You know, should I be a standby? I don't know.
As Schwab said, I know. It's easy for me.
I know. Yeah. And I talked to Judy about it because we shared the same dressing room, all four of us. It was glamour off Broadway.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, well, I was a standby. And I was like, you were? And, she, you know, because you always feel like, well, they have to have a path.
Right.
It has to be like this or else it's not going to work.
Yeah.
You know? And she's like, well, I was a standby and there's nothing wrong with it. And you've never been on Broadway and it'll be your first chance. And I was just like, okay, like that's all I needed was somebody to say, do it.
Yeah.
This is, sounds amazing. And so I took that job and I got to be the understudy for Idina and meet like one of another hero.
Idina.
Idina.
Were you like the rest of us? Like was Rent sort
oh,
of?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Rent was just like.
Day and night.
I remember like standing in line when there was still a Tower Records
okay.
and like waiting yeah. for that album to come out. And so, you know, but I wanted to just act very casual and
sure.
cool around
no biggie.
Idina Menzel. But I was just like, oh, my God. And so I would just like hang out with her. Like, and I see how it is now. Like, it was probably really random that like your standby is like, hey, mind if I come to your dressing room? Like, I just wanted to just be around her because I was such a fan.
And by the way, I'm sure she loved it.
Oh, I mean, she couldn't have been
nicer. She's the most down-to-earth, amazing woman.
She could not have been nicer to me. And I so appreciated it because I learned so much from her.
I can't believe, like, Bette, Judy, Idina, like, all these people were your first friends.
Yeah, they were.
An introduction to this world.
They were. I remember Idina one time, she was like, you know, Mandy, if you want, you can have my house seats for the show. And I was like, oh my God, that's so great. Because my parents are coming and, like, I don't have a lot of money. And she's like, well, you know, house seats aren't free. And I was like, oh, they're
right.
not? Like,
right.
oh, and she's like, no, you just get like
really good
seats. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah. You know, it was just like the little things that I learned.
But that's how you learn.
Yeah,
how would you know?
Like, I didn't know, you know, tip your dresser and do all those kind of things. Like, I learned that from Idina and how you treat people. And, you know, and she was just so lovely to everybody. And, you know, I don't mean to like just go on and on, but she really was. And so.
No, but those people, like the number one on the call sheets or above,
yeah.
the, like those are the people. I talk about that a lot in
yeah.
here. Like, for, you know, Danny Burstein, it was like Bernadette Peters. For,
right.
for all these different people, who that was when they started
right.
is what paved the way for who they are when they've had the great fortune of being that
oh,
person.
It's so true. And I learned so much. So I'm so glad I was her standby.
Mm-hmm.
And then I
did
got,
you get to go on?
I got to
it?
Go on after 3 months.
Okay.
Because she never misses. And it was thrilling. And everybody at Disney was there, so they saw me, and then I got to replace. I replaced her, and
so Tom Schumacher angel.
Is another angel, and still another angel. I saw him the other day, and you know, and then between replacing her, I did Dance of the Vampires, which co-starred Michael Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another. I remember that audition and having to audition for him. And, you know, everybody went around and was like, hi, I'm so-and-so. And then he was like, hi, I'm Michael Crawford. And I was, and that's horrible accent, sorry. But I was like, oh my God, you know, and everybody just started laughing because I really didn't think he was going to be there.
Of course
you know?
Not.
And I got that job. I
that's
got that,
how real this callback
oh, it
was.
So real.
You were not being punked.
No, it was so real. And then I dropped to my knees and I was like, I got the job. Like when I got the job. And then I had the time of my life, you know, I was like, this is great. And then, you know, the run through where people come and see you before we open, my agents came back and were like, well, it's good. You have time to like work on it. And I was like, work on it? What do you mean? Like, this is a big hit. You know, this is amazing. I've come. Everybody knows.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to know your name.
Totally.
And then we opened and it was just like, oh, my God, like the worst possible.
Bloodbath.
Oh, it was awful. And I don't think I've seen anything that mean since, you know, because that was like the start of like chat rooms and the internet and all that kind of stuff.
Everyone had an opinion.
Yeah, everybody had an opinion. And people said, you know, really nice things about me. People said really mean things about me. David Simon said that I lacked in looks. And that was like,
wait, John Simon?
Oh, Gene Simmons. Yeah. Because
he was notorious for really writing like the most.
Sorry, Gene Simmons.
Yes.
Said.
Let's give Gene Simmons cruelty credit.
Yes. So Gene Simmons said that I lacked in singing, acting, and looks because he needed to make sure that he got that out there.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, it's such an honor that he said something mean about you. And I was just like, you know, when you're 23 and a woman who already feels like you don't really belong because of different ways that you look and you're just kind of coming into your own, I thought it was a pretty rude thing to
Absolutely.
To do, and I didn't take pride in it.
That's right.
And I had to really,
all joking aside,
yeah, I had to really
you're gutted when that happened.
You're really gutted, and I had to build myself up from that, and I became a lot stronger, not because of that, but just
in spite of it.
And a lot of people from that show stopped working in the business. They went in to do different things. And then those that continued to work, I continued to champion because it was hard. We had to be on that stage after those reviews and we did it together, you know. And other people, I remember people from other casts that were in hit shows would come and see us and like laugh in the audience, like audibly. And I just remember thinking, I'm never going to do that. And I think that's where a lot of my fearless squad kind of started, was this thing of, you know, that's a form of bullying in a way. And I didn't want to be a part of that. So I refuse, if people say, oh, did you see that show? It's so terrible. I refuse to just kind of...
To participate.
Yeah, to participate or go along with that. Because some shows that people don't like, I loved, like Sweet Smell of Success. Like I loved that show. And I thought like the choreography, like Kelly O'Hara, it was the first time I heard her voice. You know, it was like I got to see some incredible performances. And if I listen to other people, like what's the point?
So because of that experience, what is your relationship to reading reviews?
Oh, I still read them.
So how do you protect yourself or how do you prepare for that moment?
I think I don't put everything into what other people think of me. And I'm a mother now as well. So I think, you know, what I try to teach my daughter, I try to teach myself. And that's that it matters most. The work is what matters the most. And if I feel like I'm doing good work, what people say, I don't read all of it. But if I see it, it doesn't matter if it's good or if it's bad. Yeah, it still hurts.
It stings.
But it stings. But it doesn't drown me. You know what I mean? It doesn't make me feel like I have to tread back up. You know what I mean?
Well, another is Lin-Manuel Miranda,
yes,
who cast you along with an incredible creative team in,
yes,
in The Heights,
mm-hmm,
which I don't know if you guys knew when you first started that it would become what it was at the time.
Not at all. I mean, I knew when I met Lin and Tommy.
Did you know them before audition?
No,
for that
I knew Alex Lackmore because I did the reading of Wicked. I was in the ensemble with Christian Borle. It's so crazy. And so I knew Alex from that, and he had long hair at the time. But I didn't know Tommy and Lynn. I met them because my agent told me to meet them in the basement of the drama bookshop because they wanted to go through some music.
Not sketchy
at
all.
Yeah, not sketchy at all. And so I've been to the drama bookshop a lot. So
You knew your way.
I knew my way. So I went there.
That's where it started, in the basement of the drama bookshop.
Pretty much.
Which they just saved, by the way.
It started with them before, you know, I ever came to be a part of it. But I came on the same time that Chiara Alegría Hudes came on. And I remember that first rehearsal because we were all around a table just reading out of books. And Lynn said, you know, I know you guys don't know the music, so I'm just going to sing all the parts. And he started. He was like, lights up on Washington Heights. And it was like,
what's happening?
Electricity. And I was like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And he's amazing. And whatever he's doing, I want to do it. And I remember just feeling.
But did you start like as part of a workshop?
Yeah. I started as a reading.
You auditioned for the reading or you
No, I didn't audition. I was asked to do the reading.
Okay.
And then I was asked to audition for the workshop.
Do you think you were asked because you knew Alex Lackmore?
They knew Alex. I think they saw Dance of the Vampires.
See?
Yeah.
John Simon?
I know. I think it was all these things that kind of led us to
converge together, in this beautiful
way. You know? And so I did the reading and then I did Lennon in between. Mm-hmm. And during that, they did another reading. And so they wanted me to audition as well as who did the reading, the next reading. And people were like, how are you going to audition again? Like, you already did the reading. Like, don't they know you? And I was like, because I want the job.
Like, yeah, bozo.
Put your pride aside, you know? And that's just, like I said, it's where I come
right
from.
There. Yeah.
Do the work.
Not don't. That it's not hard.
No,
it's
but
hard
don't
you...
expect.
Exactly.
Don't expect. You got to work for it. Mm-hmm. And so
one more
I did.
Time. You got to what for it?
Work for it.
Work. Okay.
Work. I did. And so I did. And
you got it.
And I got it. And I remember auditioning with a scene with Olga Merides, who ended up playing Abuela. And we were sitting in at Bernie Telsey's office. We were sitting in the waiting room. And she's like, what do you think? And I'm like, I think this one's going all the way. And she's like, you think so? And I was like, yeah, this is going to be a hit.
It's special.
This is amazing. I've never heard music like this. Like, this is a hit. And I remembered that whole, when we were going to Off-Broadway, that whole rehearsal process, not being able to let go of, in some ways, the fear and the failure of
vampires.
Lennon was another show that didn't do well. Letting go of those things to allow myself to just enjoy and not worry about what's going
to
happen, like the final product.
To be in the moment. It's the hardest thing ever.
It's the hardest thing ever. And I think we were really lucky because on our road from Off-Broadway to Broadway, they had us do this documentary. And I had one part of Radical Media, this guy, Paul Bosmowski, who's become a dear friend, he followed me throughout my whole time getting ready for Broadway.
So you were one of the people chosen to follow.
Yes. And it was really like therapy.
Wow.
Because he asked me all these questions and I had to, you know, I cried. I had to talk about how I felt and my fear of rejection and my fear of failure and all these kind of things. And, you know, letting down my family if this one didn't make it, if somebody said something bad about me. And it allowed me to free myself mm-hmm. of that burden and free myself in a very public way, you know? And so that also, you know, because people feel like you get hurt and you should just move on. And there's no, you shouldn't deal in the pain of, you know, whatever you're going through, that it's just pain and that it's over. Because it's like, it's not over. It's still there. And
yeah.
you have to be true to yourself and honest with yourself. And so
I think it's when we do push it aside without processing it, that's when it is the most dangerous.
Definitely. And so
for everything.
And everything. And I lucked out because In the Heights was a hit.
Right away.
And I was part of this, you know.
But then you got to feel that.
I got to feel that. And I got to run up to the Tonys with all of my friends when they won a Tony Award, because Jeffrey Seller and Kevin McCollum allowed us, whole cast to come up. And I remember looking back and seeing, you know, Karen Olivo and Andrea Burns and Janet just crying and laughing. And we did it together. And it was just like, then they lifted up Lynn and watching him and just how hard he'd worked and all of them. And so it was just like so right, you know. And then I did that show for 2 years. And then I got called to do Wicked.
Mm-hmm.
And during In the Heights, like off.
They're like, Mandy, stop what you're doing.
It's
Can you come
time.
With us?
It's time.
I just see like a car pulling up, them escorting you.
I know. It's time.
Shh.
I know. And
it must have been hard to
leave. It was hard to leave my family. And but it was a role I'd always wanted to do. And then.
Did Adina like leave you a note? You can have my house.
No, she didn't, because she was already like mega famous.
She was in the house.
She wasn't just my like Adina from Rent. She became like
everybody's
Adina. It's the same with Lynn. Like he's no longer like our Lynn from In the Heights. He's everybody's Lynn. You know?
What is that?
I don't know. I think it's been a beautiful thing to watch because everybody's falling in love with these people that, you know, I fell in love with when I first met them. You know, everybody's seeing these things on a bigger scale that I got to see up close. So for these artists, it does not surprise me one bit. Mm-hmm. And it just makes me so, like, I just get so happy inside because mm-hmm. I'm just like, oh, the secret's out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
in
aren't
a big
they?
Way.
Yeah, like, aren't they amazing?
Guys,
you know,
I told you.
And it's true. And it's happening. It's, you know, it's happening for behind the scenes, too,
yeah.
Like with Tommy and Kiara and Alex and Andy. And, you know, because, you know, Tommy now doing the FX with Fosse Verdon,
totally.
You know, April 9th.
Yeah.
But it's like he's such a champion of women and like of women's stories. And, you know, he was such a a champion of mine. And so I think I'm just, everybody's getting to see what I've always gotten to see up close. And so for me, I'm just kind of like, if I can elevate them in any way that they've elevated me, I just continue to do it because they mean the world to me, honestly.
So when did you hear about, when did Hamilton, the musical, mm-hmm. come on your radar?
Hamilton the musical came on my radar when I lived, oh gosh, let's see, I lived, well, I had a daughter, I had a baby after I finished Wicked.
Elphaba had a baby.
Elphaba had a baby.
She was not green, but she is special.
No, my husband and I were like, well, you know, let's just have some fun. Like after, you know, I would been in shows.
What
now
did I tell you about that, about, Mandy?
I know, for about 4 years. And within a month, I was pregnant.
Oh, my God.
Luckily, like happily so. Yeah. I wanted a baby so bad. And we had the most beautiful daughter.
She's seven now?
She's seven.
Okay.
And so when, after I had a baby, it was like, oh, I felt like all I wanted to do was be with her,
mm-hmm.
like all the time. And that happened all the time. I mean, it still does. But there's something inside of me that still has that want for performing, that
sure.
want to do what I love doing. And there was a guilt also that happened with that,
okay.
you know, feeling bad about that and having to kind of come to terms and be honest with myself and go, okay, it's okay to work. It's okay to leave her,
to
you know,
both.
To want both. And I'm lucky because I got to work with my friend Andrea Burns at In the Heights, and her son was, I think, two when she started. So I got to see what it was like to be a working mom on Broadway and the struggle and the happiness of it. And I got to confide in her. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a friend that did it.
Yeah.
And so I feel lucky in that way. But I remember feeling like, well, what's missing? What's missing? You know, I have everything.
Right.
What could possibly be missing? And my mom said, you've got to sing.
Right.
Like, you got to start singing. And
so Hamilton is born around the same time that your daughter is born.
Well, Hamilton mixtape started.
Right.
Around the same time that my daughter was born. I did the Hamilton mixtape with Lynn at Lincoln Center.
Okay.
He asked me to come in and sing Say No to This, which was the Mariah song, for the first time. And so I went to Alex's apartment and learned it, because when Lynn calls, you go. When Tommy calls, you go.
Sure.
And so
I got to remember that. If
yeah.
either of them call me, I
yeah.
go.
And it was Chris Jackson, James Iglehart.
The whole family.
The whole family
was
there.
And more.
And more. And so, you know, I had to go buy a dress at Bloomingdale's because nothing fit, because I had a new mom, you know, 2 months.
Moment.
I was
yeah.
still breastfeeding.
I'm still wearing maternity pants.
It's true. And Tommy.
15 and 12.
Yeah. But I, like, another champion, Tommy gave me a room, like, so I could, you know, do breastfeeding and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so, but I did it, and I felt like, man, I love this. And Lynn did it again. They did it again. Like, this is another hit.
Yeah.
I heard this music, and I was like, this is
going
to be a
yeah.
hit. And my trajectory back to Broadway was tough, you know, new mom, trying to figure it out, you know, new mom, not having much of an income. My husband went to work full time at MoMA, and I was home with my daughter. So, you know, whatever money I made, I had to pay for babysitters mm-hmm. to go to auditions.
Right.
And, you know, it was that hour. Will you watch my kid for an hour so
yeah.
then I can go to this audition? And, you know, people asking me, well, how old is your kid now? Because they're trying to figure out, and mostly men, trying to figure out, well, and I could see it. Like, well, when, how old is it going to be difficult to work with
right.
her?
Right. Because she's in your way.
Yeah. Because she's a new mom.
Yeah.
You know, is this going to be okay for you? Is this going to be okay for your husband? Is it going to be okay for your daughter? So I was like, you know what? Forget this.
Yeah.
I'm going to start doing my own thing. So I started writing. I started creating shows for myself, and I started doing concerts. And those concerts started doing well. And so then I started to book symphonies, and I started to work with symphonies, and I started to love that. And I traveled all the time, like every month. But there was still that need for Broadway, still that love
sure.
for that. And I got a call. You know, I got a call from Tommy Cale July 5th. And he was like 2016.
12:10.
Yeah. And he was, and it was in the yeah. afternoon, because my husband, we had moved to New Jersey so we would have more space to raise a family. And my husband had a studio in the basement as well as in Brooklyn. And he was painting downstairs. And I remember getting a call from Tommy, and he left me a message, and I was like, what do you think he wants? And my husband was like, I don't know. What do you think he wants? I'm like, I don't know. Like,
don't touch
I should
the
call
phone.
Him back. Oh, my
no,
God.
No, don't call him.
So right. then I was like, well, I'm going to be cool and
yeah.
like, wait 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So I waited 10 minutes, and I was like, hey, what's
so
going
cool.
on? I'm so cool. So I waited 10 minutes, and I'm like, hey, what's up? Like, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, yeah, so how do you feel about replacing on Broadway? And I was like, what? Let me think about it. Hold on.
Let me call Judy Kuhn.
I know.
What would she do?
I know. And I was like, yes, please, please. And I, at that point, because I had been traveling so much, and I saw Hamilton at the Public, I was like, I kind of put it out there that this is what I want to do. And I started learning the music just on my own. You know,
you loved it.
I was teaching. Every plane flight, I would listen to that song and I would learn it. And the song was Satisfied. And I was like, this is what I want to sing. This is what I want to do. Like, I just manifested it. And then they called. And so I was like, well, I know it. Like, I'm ready. Because he's like, you're going to have to go on pretty fast and this kind of thing. And I'm ready. And then I went and I rehearsed it with Alex. And most of the lyrics were wrong.
Were you doing the Weird Al Yankovic version?
Yeah, I was just learning just from like, and Alex is like, actually, Mandy, she's saying this because the rap is so fast.
Right. You're like, I don't know what.
And I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, so I had to kind of relearn it.
Yeah. By the way, there was some choreography also that
choreography,
you had to
there's
learn.
A turntable. Yeah. There's a lot.
But you got it. I'm ready.
Oh, I was ready. And I was so happy to just be in the room with my friends who just wanted to see me fly. And, you know, and not in a wicked kind of way, but just in a life kind of way. And we're rooting for me. And I just felt like I was home, you know, and I was, because In the Heights is at the Richard Rodgers, same theater that I was.
You were literally home.
Yeah.
Is it the same dressing room?
Same dressing room, number 8. Wow. And, you know, and it felt just so right. You know, Renee created an incredible character, and she did it, and she's a mom. She has 2 kids. And when I came in, she was just like, what do you need? How are you doing? This is how I survived. This, you know, might help you, this and that. And so it was
what
like,
were some things?
It was
like
a sisterhood.
Physically or emotionally, what were like some takeaways that you could share?
You know, she's a hard worker like me. And it wasn't about, you know, if you have to miss shows, that wasn't ever brought on the table because that's just not what we do.
Right.
We're very old school. But it was about like napping after drop off.
Uh-huh.
You know, make sure you take a nap after drop off. You know, take care of yourself. Try to.
I mean, after you bring your daughter to school.
Yeah, that drop off that, you know, people go home after the show. I go home and then I wake up at 6:30 to wake up my daughter with my husband and make sure that, you know, the lunch is made and all that kind of stuff. But she's like, make sure you go to sleep.
Right.
And that has been such a. That's such a wise thing because it was like self-care.
Yep.
She told me things that would help me take care of myself during the process and, you know, places to lift the dress so you don't trip. And, you know, she
really
just
practical.
Just her support alone was enough. It was the same thing with Adina. You know, when I replaced it was like, oh, do this and this and now it's yours. And because she'll always be there. It'll always be hers. When you originate a role, it's always yours.
Sure.
You know, but it was just that passing of the baton.
Yeah.
And it felt so nice to have that, you know, that sisterhood. Because I feel like whatever tour has opened, you know, they call me and they're like, and it's the same with Wicked. It has the same sisterhood. And that's how it should be, you know, because
sharing.
We're all here and we've all got to do 8 shows a week. And 8 shows a week is a bear.
And you've been doing it for over 2 years now?
Over 2 years, happily.
Yeah.
And I love it. And, you know, and I've gotten to share it with my daughter who started, you know, when she was 4 and a half, I started doing it. And I was like, how am I going to do this? You know, how am I going to take her to school? And, you know, now I'm a Girl Scout leader and doing all these different things. But I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And I show young people in the show that it's possible to have a career and a family, you know, and you don't do it alone. And I tell them, you know, my husband is, you know, 75% of the reason I'm able to do what I can do because of his love and because of his, you know, his ability to be home with our daughter and take care of her, because I wouldn't be able to do it by myself, you know?
You know, Daphne Rubin Vega was sitting also half Jewish.
Right.
Half
so crazy.
Latina.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about being a part of Rent, which was sort of the predecessor
right.
in terms of something being a global, loved globally.
Yeah.
The music being so important to people. And then just the culture and communities built around the show.
Yeah.
You know, and she was sort of clear. It's like she couldn't really be articulate beyond saying thank you. Right. Like on every level, because it's really it's hard to find language sometimes to describe what it is to literally be in the eye of the storm of something so magnificent and far reaching in ways that
and being so young
and being
not really knowing how to process it. That.
And then there was very little social media, right? Just sort of when you were talking
about... I can't
imagine
if Rent like opened now, it would be like 10 times bigger than it was because of social.
But they could have their lives in some way. Yeah. Maybe there was a balance of a sort. I don't know. But you are, like, I'm sitting across from a woman who's playing Angelica Schuyler in Hamilton on Broadway.
Yeah.
Right now. Mm-hmm. And it is so heady for me to even try to imagine. It was heady for me to imagine talking to you about it today, because it's such a there's the thing that's outside of you. Mm-hmm. Like, you are going to work and doing your job.
I'm doing what I love.
Doing what you love.
And it can't be lost, you know? And I think that's sometimes what
people... But when you said, I still love it.
Yeah, you still love it, because some people get into the whole thing of, you know, for me, more is just more. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean always better.
Right.
You know? And I think so many young people that surround the show are always looking for the next thing, or, you know, because that's just how it is.
When you weren't in it. Yeah. Like, was there a part of you that was like, wait, those are my friends, half the cast from...
No.
Like, I want to be there with them.
No, I never thought about it like that, because I come from a family, my father always said there's room for everybody. And I never felt like, why? And I think that has always helped me in my life, because I've never felt like, why her, not me?
Uh-huh.
Because I felt like,
so
if
I... talking about this.
Well, if I want... Believe me, there's certain things that, you know, I go, oh, I wish I could have gotten that. Or, you know, and that's just...
You mean you're human?
Yeah, I'm human. I'm not, you know, this floating thing that's like, everything's great.
Yeah.
No, but I have to put myself in check. You know, I remind myself that that's just not... It wasn't my time. And I have to...
Now is your time.
I have to allow that, or else what's the fun of having friends if you can't be happy for them? You know, it's just like, I want my friends to fly.
Yeah.
You know,
and
I want them
to fly.
Yeah, because it's not... And I look at life now, and maybe it's just becoming a mom and all that kind of stuff.
And just the wisdom of living.
Maybe, you know, but it's just like, I look at their life and I go, oh, they're doing this. And their family's doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, I saw their dad the other day. I'm so happy. You know, I'm meeting with my friends from In the Heights today to have dinner, you know, and just talk with them.
Well, no, because you're going to be here till then. I'm
right.
So sorry.
I know.
They'll
but
come
it's like,
here.
I just want to catch up. How are you feeling? One of my friends is getting married. You know, Janet DeCall just got engaged. I'm like, when's the wedding? What's happening?
Yeah.
It's like
real stuff.
Real life. This is real life. And so I think when it's very easy to get caught in the hamster wheel of more, it has to be more, it has to be better, it has to be bigger, it has to be this, when you have to look at your life and say, gosh, look what I've been given, you know, and remind people. I mean, I don't want to be that person at the theater that's like, you're so lucky. But at the same time, I'm the person that's been through different shows that haven't made it and had to be booed and all this kind of stuff. It's like, you are so lucky, and you get paid for it.
Yeah.
You get a good salary. Like, you get to live a good life. Like, I get to, you know, yeah, my life is busy and it's crazy, but I get to do what I love for a living. And, you know, because of this show, like, I get to pay for my parents to fly out here to see me. You know, they don't have
in-house seats.
Yeah, they don't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
You know, and that feels so good. And I, you know, I just feel like I have so much to be grateful for.
Wait, did Bubby see it?
Bubby has not seen it. Bubby can't travel anymore.
Okay.
She would love to travel.
Has she seen video, or has she been able to?
No, because they don't have bootlegs of Hamilton. But I call my Bubby, and don't tell anybody, but I sing the songs for my Bubby. And because my Bubby's been there for everything, but the last show she saw was, I guess, Wicked, and then she's seen me in concert.
Right.
And she's been able to come see me do that. And in my concert, I talk about her a lot. And so I think that makes her feel good. And but, you know, she's like every Bubby. She's like, well, what's so special? You know, what I do, you know? But it's like she doesn't...
You're like everything.
Everything. Because without her, without the Showboat Dinner Theater and the pickles. And
it's incredible.
Her making the phone calls, you know, I wouldn't be here.
So before you go on stage each night, maybe it's the same, maybe it isn't the same. Do you have like a moment or a ritual that just gets you from whatever your day was to prepare to tell this story?
Yeah, I think I'm a very immediate kind of person. How would you call that? Like, I don't really overthink too much. Spontaneous. I'm a very spontaneous person. Somebody calls me, you want to do this? Yeah, sure. And then, you know, somebody will be like, why did you do that? You're not doing this. And I'll be like, oh, right. Like, sorry. Like, I'm just.
You're in the moment.
I'm in the moment. I'm that kind of person. I'm that kind of actor. And so for me, it happens the moment before I hit the stage. This feeling of like adrenaline and just, where am I? Who am I? What do I want? And that's how I begin every show. And I really have to, you know, people say, oh, aren't you tired of doing 8 shows a week? Well, I kind of love it. I kind of love the routine. I love that. And I love feeling that it's somebody new. And I especially love the Edge of Hams that we do with 11th graders who've probably never seen a Broadway show. Or if they have, they've seen Phantom of the Opera. But this is a show that, like, they've just learned about in history and they can relate to. And so because they're so honest. And they yell at my character when I start, you know, satisfied and I start talking about Hamilton. Like, they'll be like, boo, boo, because they fall in love with. And
that's your sister's husband.
I know, with Eliza and Hamilton, they fall in love during Helpless. And then when they hear my story in the beginning, they start to boo. And, you know, at first I'd be like, why are they booing me? Like,
it's hurting my feelings.
Yeah. What am I doing? And then all of a sudden I realize, oh, I'm doing this right, because at the end they're cheering. And it's like to see them go through the story and what, you know, was directed and written. And it's like that show where everything is just meld so well together, you know?
Like that turntable, right? At the center of it.
It's the hardest song I've ever sung. And it's because it's a play within a play. And you have to get all the beats. And so I think at the end, I just feel like, yeah. And I give a nod to Lynn, because I'm like, yeah, you did it.
Yeah.
You know.
Got it.
You got
it. Did it.
You know, because he's still like, for me, that little, like, he's like a brother, you know. And it's just like to see him where he came from and like where he's, what he wrote. It's just genius.
Yeah.
It's genius. And I tell him that and he makes fun of me, but I don't care, because it is. It's like,
why? What does he say when you say that?
Oh, like, he'll be just like, Mandy says I'm a genius. And I'll be like, well, he is. Like, what do you want me to say? I don't say that to everybody, you know? Yeah. But he is. And I have a sense of pride with that.
Yeah.
You know?
I know. So. There's the line, how lucky we are to be alive right now. And
I mean, that's everything.
Yeah.
That line is everything.
Yeah.
That's hard on a daily basis. But to put that into words,
yeah.
It's just like you understand, and you just wrote what we're all feeling.
Yeah.
You know, just to remind yourself that, you know, and how much he loves his wife and you know, like the relationship of Hamilton and Eliza, knowing him personally and hearing those lyrics is just like, oh, God.
So beautiful.
Yeah, it's so beautiful.
So you're going to step out of Hamilton for a minute to do The Who.
Yes.
To the Who's Tommy.
Yeah.
In D.C. Mm-hmm. for like a short little run. People will be very lucky to get there.
I'm like getting to live another part of my dream, because Tommy was like one of my favorite musicals growing up.
Yeah.
And I remember going to see it in L.A. when it came on tour. And I loved it so much that I used Acid Queen as my audition song for pretty much the first 2 years of my life in New York City. And it got me my first jobs.
Unbelievable. So this is your way of saying thank you.
Thank you. But I'm not Acid Queen. I get to play Mrs. Walker. And Alice Ripley is like, I'm a huge fan. And so to be able to play that part now at this point in my life, I know what to do.
Yeah.
You know,
you're
and
ready.
Just to sink my teeth into that music, it's just like, oh, I cannot wait.
So this is like a week long.
It's a week
concert?
Long. Yeah, it's a week long concert at the Kennedy Center. It starts April 23rd. But yeah, I'm so excited. I can't wait.
Well, the people who get to be at the Kennedy Center are very lucky. And for those of us who end up seeing some bootleg version of it that doesn't exist, but we'll find it.
Right.
Mandy Gonzalez, thank you for hashtag fearless.
Oh,
fearless
you.
Squad.
Thank you.
Thank you for your music. Thank you for your message, your generosity, your beauty on every level. John Simon was wrong, but I really, really have looked forward to this for a long time. And I got to see you in the show, to have this moment with you in person. And here's to like a lifetime of work and family and love and struggle and triumph.
Thank you.
And here's
thank
to life.
You.
L'chaim.
L'chaim.
Thank you, love.
Clouds can make the wind blow. If you want more information about my guests, go to the website littleknownfactspodcast.com. I also wanted to tell you that there is now a new addition to the website. It is a button that says contributions. This podcast is a true labor of love, and I really, really want to keep doing it for a long time. So if you like listening as much as I love to do it, please feel free to contribute. It would mean the world to me. Also, on Twitter, you can find me at Alana Levine. Instagram is Little Known Facts Podcast, and on Facebook, Little Known Facts Podcast. You can also feel free to rate and review the show on the iTunes show page. This podcast is recorded at Hanger Studios in New York City. Do you believe in stories? I know I do. Do you feel like there is more to your story? Personally, I feel like there's more to every story. And I got some good news. There's this great company called the Pocket Media Group, and they can help you find the more in your story and tell it so it connects to the people you most want to reach. They specialize in video, photography, writing, design, branding, and strategy, all the pieces you need to start something new or polish up something old. And they understand that story, whether it's a photograph, a video, or words on a page, powerfully connects people and ideas. So whether you're a not-for-profit, a company, or just good old you with an idea, whatever your story, mission, or message, reach out to the people at the Pocket Media Group at www.thepocketmediagroup.com and let them help you start telling your story. Because, look, we know there is definitely more to your story.